This is the Lifestyle Liberation Podcast, episode numero 8. Howdy and welcome to this podcast, which is all about helping you turn your passion into a thriving business. So today I'm talking to Jennifer Loudon and you'll discover how to create life-changing online courses. We'll cover the most common mistakes and fears. We'll also look at the creative process for creating courses and how you can get started right now. Because there's a lot that goes into creating a course. There's a lot of stuff that keeps people from taking action and maybe keeps you from moving forward. So when you're done listening, you'll feel inspired, motivated, and ready to take action because you'll realize that taking action is really the only way forward. You'll become aware of the fact that you can do this. You can follow your heart and you can build a business around what you love. So with that said, let's dive right into the interview, and I hope you enjoy the goodness that's about to follow. So today I'm here with Jennifer Loudon, who's a writer, coach, best-selling author, teacher, and just plain awesome, and we'll be talking about how to create life-changing online courses that people will love. So how are you doing, Jennifer?
Oh, you know what? I'm feeling really good today. It's an intense time in my life. My mom has Alzheimer's and, you know, just a lot of change is happening. But so some days I'm not so good, but today I am.
Awesome. Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So could you tell us a little bit about your background and where you come from? Because I'm sure my short Scandinavian-like introduction left more to be desired.
Oh, I love your short introduction. I love it. Well, I'm somebody who I think of myself as, the curious outsider, the gypsy learner, the person who never did anything the traditional way. And I used to feel a lot of shame about that, Henry. And I think that one of the core ideas that I write about and that I teach is that's okay. The way we do it is okay. But that's become so much more acceptable than it was when I started out 21 years ago. And I started off as a screenwriter and went through just a real dark night of the soul. I guess we know now that we can have midlife crises in our 20s. And that's what I did. And out of that came my first book, The Woman's Comfort Book. And it was just a real pioneering book and became a word of mouth bestseller because no one was talking about self-care and self-nurturing for women then. It was just a very not a well-discussed idea, which is kind of hysterical because 21 years later, everybody talks about it. It's a huge part of Oprah's work and there's an entire shelf of books about self-care in the bookstore now. But it launched me into my career because people wanted more of that. So they called and asked me to speak and to teach. And I started writing more books and just following what I was curious about and wanted to know more about and looking at my own life and then doing a lot of research. And that's what led me to write 5 more books and to create online courses and do all kinds of other ventures. It's just the curiosity about really how do we show up for this life? How do we grab hold of and be here for this that's happening right now?
Yeah, I find the curiosity and excitement is really the key to living a fulfilling life and doing something you enjoy doing.
It is, and it's hard to nurture that because our brains aren't built for it. I spoke at our little local yoga center this past weekend, more like a facilitated a discussion because we want to get more community going. And so it was just 12 of us, women only, and we talked about exactly that. We talked about how the brain is wired to live in the future or the past, literally wired to be rehearsing either what we're afraid is going to happen or what we want to be ready for, or what's already happened in the past. And knowing that really helps me forgive myself when I lose my curiosity and excitement because I'm rehearsing the past, rehearsing the future or reliving the past.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And this actually brings us to one of my questions, which is, what is a life-changing online course? Because it's easy to think that it's something that has to be this big, shiny thing that instantly changes people's lives.
Oh, yes, of course, you know. And then when that doesn't happen, you get really discouraged and you never do anything again.
Yeah,
so there's a couple of things I want to say about that. One, a huge part of teaching, leading, training is doing your best and then letting go of the results. And that it sounds so trite, but Henry, it took me probably, I'm still learning that. If when I lead a retreat or offer a course, if everybody doesn't complete it, if everybody doesn't have a life-changing experience, I can get so bummed. But that's not my business. My business is to get feedback, to see what tweaks I feel comfortable and confident to make, and then to keep offering the best I can. So you really have to know that what people do with what you offer is not your business, and you'll never really fully understand it.
Yeah, and it's actually when you're starting out, imperfection will always be there. So you have to stop. Something I did in the beginning when I was starting to create online courses and ebooks, I started looking at people who'd been doing this for, say, 5 years or 10 years, and they had huge courses, and I had like a small ebook.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to compare yourself. How would you say someone can avoid that comparison? I guess it happens automatically, but is there something you do or tell your clients and customers to do?
Yeah, there are two things. One, write down, get it on paper. Don't keep it in your busy little brain. What are these comparisons you're making? And then walk away from them and then sit down with them again. And if you're really immersed in them, you're going to have, or really hooked by them, you're going to have someone else help you, a friend or a partner or even a coach. And ask yourself, what out of these comparisons is actually possible for me to deliver now where I am? Ground yourself in the facts of who you are right now. One of the hugest shadows of the online world that hurts people, damages them, drains them every day is thinking you need to be where somebody else is, which takes you out of what your gifts are and where you are. It's inflation, it's insanity, and it then will make you create a course if you actually do have the energy left to create a course that sounds like the other people you're comparing yourself to. That's not what your people want, and that's not how your business is going to thrive. Your business is going to thrive because you're embracing your life experiences, your knowledge, your voice. But the comparisons are going to be there. So get them on paper and look, like, is there anything here that I could actually deliver or embrace or learn from right now? And there may be a few things like, oh, I really like good design. Oh, but I can't afford an expensive designer like so-and-so. But what could I do design-wise right now with this ebook? So try to let go of the stuff that's not your business. Try to let go of the stuff that's inflation and really impossible for you right now, and try to see what you could embrace and use right now.
Yeah, I always talk about do what you can do right now, because you can't really do anything that I'm getting twisted, tongue twister here, but yeah. Do what you can do now, because you can't do what you can't do, basically.
Exactly. And the other part of it is, your brain is built for comparisons, just like it's built to live in the future and the past. Don't make yourself wrong that you go into comparison. Get it on paper and then use it. What here is possible for me right now? And that's a very important phrase, right now.
Yeah, and something else that popped up was when you mentioned getting feedback and applying feedback. I'm always listening to feedback, but I noticed that when people tell me that something's wrong with my course or I need to fix this, I always have this pulling back, like, oh no, this is personal. But then when I let go, things get easier. And I always get feedback from people telling me that I'm so open to feedback. And it's funny because I don't feel open, but just because I feel one way doesn't mean I can't actually get feedback and do the best I can to help my customers and improve the course.
That is a beautiful, powerful distinction, Henry. I hope everybody listening really takes that in. Separating out your feelings as a creator, as a trainer, as a teacher from the material. When I was new to this work, I would walk around literally. And sometimes before, like I can remember I was in Las Vegas before a big speaking thing, walking around my hotel room, looking out at the view of Las Vegas of all places, saying out loud, I am not my work. I am not my work. And that's really what you're pointing to. We have to separate out our own sweetheart and our own big ego and our own desire to be perfect and affect everybody amazingly from reality. And reality is, oh, that sentence wasn't clear. That exercise didn't land. You promised me something that I don't think you delivered.
Yeah, and I think there's something, I don't remember what was this guy's name. I think he was a journalist or something. He talked about the gap where you have to put in a lot of work to see the success or be able to create the course you want to create. So it takes the effort of putting in a lot of work before you even start getting satisfied with the content or the course you create.
Yes. Yes. I think that was that Parker Palmer. I'm not sure who's the teacher of teachers. That might've been one of the interviews in Teach Now, or perhaps it was someplace else, but yeah, the creative person, and you're a creative person, end of discussion, you're a creative person, always has to live in that gap. It's the gap between what you want to do and what you actually do. You think about it when you write something, right? Maybe you're off for a walk in the woods and you're like, oh my God, this incredible idea is coming to me. And this is going to be amazing. And then you sit down to write it and you're like, what was it?
Yeah.
That's the same thing when we create a course, right? And to learn to be comfortable in that gap is a huge skill. And we don't talk about that enough, I don't think.
And I find this goes for pretty much everything in life and business. There's this gap where where the more comfortable you are with being uncomfortable, the more progress you can make, the more you can grow. And if you can at the same time step out of judging yourself and comparing yourself, and just let all of that be there while you're doing your best, then it's going to be a lot easier and a lot more fun.
Yeah. And you made another beautiful distinction there, Henry, which is you said you let it be there. So in the other hole that I see creative people and teachers falling into is I'm going to do my work. I'm going to create. I'm going to offer the course, you know, fill in the blank for yourself. When that thing over here, the doubt, the comparisons, whatever your particular demons are, when they go away, they're never going to go away. They simply don't bother you as much. They don't hook you as deeply or as quickly or for as long. There's a great story that the meditation teacher, of course, as soon as I wanted to say his name, I can see his face. His name has gone out of my head. I'll think of it in a moment. But he talks about leading a silent retreat. And there was a moment when another student looked up and watched him just watching everybody eating at the meal. And he was just watching everybody. And then at the Dharma talk, when you actually talk to each other, you know, the teacher talks and the students ask questions, the rest of the time the retreat is silent. This student said, hey, you know, when I'm eating, you know, I'm just judging everybody and the way they're chewing. And I just, it's just so horrible. And the teacher said, oh, I'm doing the same thing. It just doesn't bother me anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I found happening to me over the years. It's kind of like when the judging comes up, I feel like, I don't feel like doing that right now, but so I just let it be there. Then I focus on what can I do right now?
Yes. Yes. So it's a beautiful, beautiful, so important. And I think what people think when they're in the comparison mode and they're looking at someone's course or book or retreat and they say, oh, they must not feel that way anymore. And that's what allows them to go on and do this work. But that's absolutely not true for anybody.
Yeah, usually they feel it more, but they're just not as bothered.
Right, or they feel, you know, they maybe some of it softens and kind of dissipates, but then it comes up in some other form later, right? I mean, that's the human condition.
Yeah, it just seems like we never stop coming up against challenges, and we never stop growing. So the quote-unquote problems and challenges and fears will never go away.
Exactly. And if they do, I think it's time to die.
Yeah, exactly. So one question I get a lot is, how do you find a course to teach? Like, how do you find the intersection between what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and what people actually want to pay for?
That's a really good question. There's not one answer for that, but there's two approaches, really. I'll tell you the first approach, which is the one I use. I get really curious, witness of what is most up for me. What's the juicy place that I want to either learn more about, or the juicy place that I'm personally learning, or maybe both. And I start writing and mind mapping right there. Now, sometimes there's not enough material there. I run out of steam and I'm like, okay, that's not going to be a course. Maybe it's going to be a blog post and that's it. But sometimes there's more there. And that's the example of my course Teach Now, right? There was more and there was more and there was more that just kept growing and snowballing around it. So the first approach is, what are you itching to learn, or what's learning you? And then dig it in there. Now, the other approach is the one that we hear a lot more of in the entrepreneurial community, which is go out there and survey your people. Go out there and look. What are the blog posts that you're writing, or the articles or the guest posts that you're writing, that are really getting a lot of traffic and a lot of buzz or a lot of comments or a lot of controversy? Or if you don't have that marketplace yet for yourself, look at the people that you read, that you follow, the magazines, the blogs, the newspaper articles. Huffington Post is a great place to research. What are the hot button items that you see trending? You can use Google Alerts for search terms that you're interested in, and see who's writing about it. What are people's reactions to it? What are their pain points? And then I say you must go into yourself at that point and say, where does this intersect what I'm curious about, what I'm livid about, what I've had life experiences about? So you can come in from either place. I need to come in from the personal place. If I go out to research, I get completely flat.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how I do this, but I think I start by looking at the problems, like you said, pain points. So I listen to my readers and ask them what they're struggling with, what they're having trouble with, and where they're going. So what's their end goal? And then I basically feel my way through. So I go inside, I see what I'm excited about and where my heart is leading me, basically.
Yes. And I think that is more risky, but I also want to tell everybody listening, there's probably a way that you are wired for. It doesn't mean that you can't bring in some more of the other approach. And if you could see me now, everybody, I'm holding both of my hands out, my right and my left hands, with my palms open. And it's as if I'm balancing two approaches. And I think each of us needs to find the balance between the two. And you're probably going to lean more in one direction than the other, which is fine. Don't fight it, but get curious about your blind spots about your direction. So my blind spots are, if I'm fascinated about it, damn it, everybody else should be fascinated about it. So I've had to learn that sometimes what I care about, and I've written a blog post about, and I think, oh my God, this is going to be a book, right? This is it. This is my next book. And nobody really pays attention. And I have to listen to that, right? I may be ahead of the pack. I may be too much in my own stuff, right? But I have to listen to that, because I'm in business and I need to make money, right? So I need to balance my own passions with how much energy and time I have to bring in the income that I want and need.
Yeah, that brought up something for me, which is I like to remind people that there are no rules. So even though I'm talking and you're talking, we're giving tips on what works for us, that doesn't mean that someone listening has to do things our way. So there are no rules, and it takes time to find your thing, because I've been doing this since 2006, late 2006, and figuring things out, smashing my head against the wall and being frustrated and learning along the way. So it takes time.
Yes, it takes time. And that is, you know, okay, everybody, you just heard that idea. You just heard what Henry said, it takes time. And you probably just shoved it away. Like, oh, whatever. I've heard that a million times. It's very different to take it in your heart and live it. And one thing that I really see gets in the way of beginning trainers, teachers, speakers, facilitators, writers is wanting it to happen overnight. And it gets in your way because it takes you out of the learning curve and it makes you look for the golden bullet, the silver bullet, the I'll take this $2,000 course and that will be it. And instead, it's really doing the chop wood, carry water. What's it like to study writing? What's it like to study teaching for the next year? What's it like to really chunk this down and be patient and be humble? And I speak from personal experience. I have wasted years looking for the golden silver bullet and trying to rush ahead. And only now, and truly, you know, after turning 50, for God's sakes, am I like, okay, what do I really want to embrace and slow down and get really intimate with and masterful at? Really making a choice. And that's scary, right? Because you may not be good at it. It may not make you money. You may fall on your face.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the shortcut to success is no shortcut at all. Because when you're not hurrying, when you're not rushing, you can actually enjoy what's here in this very moment, which is what everyone wants. If they want to build a business around their passion or do something they love, the end goal is to do something you enjoy doing. So why not find that enjoyment right now and then let the rest of the pieces fall into place?
Yeah, why not? Because our egos want to be big dogs. I mean, the question I'm living with this year, and maybe for the rest of my life, is what am I drawn to if I don't have to be somebody? That's a hard one for a lot of us. We want to be somebody. And then there's the real, like, I need to make money, right? For some people, it's like, oh my God, if I don't bring in some money this month, you know, for those of us who have taken the plunge, those of you who have taken the plunge, maybe you don't have a straight job, or maybe you're trying to do this on the side while you're raising kids. You're like, I got to bring in some money. So that fear can drive us to look for the quick way, the fast way. And I'm just naming these because I don't want people to feel alone or bad or ashamed if you fall into these traps.
Yeah, and sometimes actually falling into these traps is what will help you succeed down the road. So it doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Right. You see what's going on and you go, oh, I mean, this is again, being human, right? It's not about not falling into the trap. It's about seeing it with so much kindness and so much love and saying, oh, wow. I mean, I coached a client on this yesterday. She needs to do some real chop wood, carry water stuff in her business. And it's where she goes to sleep, if you will. It's where she gets all balled up. And I'm like, your job is to do this work. And the first step was to hire somebody to do something for her. And it's to know that when you get sleepy and you get anxious and you want to go do something else instead, your only job is to stay awake and keep coming back to these simple tasks. In this case, it was hiring a bookkeeper. Hiring a bookkeeper doesn't sound sexy. Launching a big new show, a big new product, that's sexy. But hiring a bookkeeper is often, especially when you get a little farther along in your business, hiring people or getting certain kinds of support is often where we most get stuck and we need to really pay attention, right?
Yeah. And I want to go back to something you mentioned, which was teaching as you're learning, because one big problem I see is that people believe they have to be experts before they can teach a course or charge for anything.
Yeah. That's a huge, I mean, I think if there's one idea out of the Teach Now course that blows people away is that we really get people to embrace the idea that being an expert is rarely what you need to be. If you're teaching brain surgery, I want you to be an expert. If you're teaching, you know, how to split an atom, I want you to really know what you're doing. But for those of us who are in the creative arts, the soft arts, the teaching from our life experience, we don't want to be experts because it actually makes us a bore. It makes us teach at a level that people aren't going to be able to get. Beginners aren't going to be able to get what we know because we're going to be teaching from the expert place. And if you just let me get woo-woo for a moment, the expert guru model is on its way out, and the leader as part of the circle, the leader as part, as equal, is on its way in. And you're going to see more and more of that. Second of all, the expert model, I know this because when I wrote my first book, I was 26. And I thought, nobody's going to listen to me. So I pretended, not pretended literally, I didn't lie, but in my writing voice, to be the therapist PhD voice, right? Nobody wanted to buy that book proposal. I went back and wrote it from my quirky, not a good writer at that point at all, 26-year-old self. And two major publishers wanted to buy it and went on to sell hundreds of thousands of copies, right? So when we're an expert, we're going to lose our unique perspective, our stories, our experiences, our quirky exercises that bring the material to life. So we really want to be in beginner's mind.
Yeah, it again comes back to trying to be someone you're not. And that disconnects you from your true self, if you want to, or in search for a better word.
Yes, no, I think, and then the piece that may come up for people who are listening is like, but what I have experienced isn't unique enough. You know what? That unique thing is forget unique. You are unique because you are you. And if you look at some people who are very successful in the world, in whatever field you want to look at, please look beyond the online world.
Yeah, I mean, something that happened to me was when I started what I wanted to do, I started in a very vague market. So I started a blog on personal development and I didn't really believe I had anything to share, but I wanted to do something anyway because I was sick of listening to my own excuses and fears. And then I discovered that people actually wanted to hear my perspective. So just by me sharing what I knew in the way I could do was unique enough for people. So you just have to start and then you will eventually bump into something that resonates with you and others.
Yes. And the only way you do it is by doing it, right?
Yeah.
You know, and nobody wants to do it before they get it right, because then it won't, you know, they won't be safe. So it's the same thing we were talking about before with the self-doubt or the comparisons or whatever other demons are in your room with you right now as you're listening to this podcast. You just, another one of those is, I want to get it right. I want it to be the perfect thing. I want to know. You can't know. It's like throwing spaghetti at the wall to see if it's done.
And that brings me to one question, which is, how do you start creating an online course? We talked about this with the, like, how you create some of your stuff. And I found that my, like, early stages of creating a course is just creative chaos. I have mind maps, I have pieces of paper, I have documents on my computer. Mm-hmm. And then as I let my mind chew on things, I start becoming clear and it almost happens by itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the things that I teach when I teach writing every year in Taos, New Mexico, is I preach for the whole week ways and call out for the women ways to become aware of their own creative process. And that's what you have a lot of awareness through your spiritual and meditation and yoga practice. And so we all need that awareness. But if you don't have it yet, those of you who are listening, you're like, I have no idea how I create. I have no idea how to even get started. I've never done this before. Start with what I call dump your brain, right? Ask yourself the question, what do I most want to teach? And if the word teach freaks you out, what do I most want to create? Or what do I most want to offer? And then do nonstop, automatic, whatever you want to call it, stream of consciousness writing. But do it for 10 or 15 minutes without stopping. Put on a piece of music, put on a timer, whatever. Create a container for yourself. This is going to get you to the place that Henry's talking about, like he just starts mind mapping or dumping, because you got to get past the busy mind. You got to get past the demons at the gate who say you don't have anything to offer. This is stupid. And the way to do it is just keep your hand moving. You don't have to hurry, but don't edit or cross anything out. And then you can take a little break, go for a walk, you know, dance a little bit. I think dancing is like the most incredible way to get your creative juices flowing. And then you can ask yourself some more questions like, since nothing is off limits for me to offer or to teach, I could include, and then write for another 5 or 10 minutes. You know, you'll start to see repetition happening then. You'll start to see the themes that you most want to offer start to arise. The best learning experiences I've had, the worst learning experiences I've had, and write for 5 or 10 minutes on each of those questions. And then go back and look. What's the core idea that you want to explore right now that started to arise out of all this writing? And you'll find one. You might find more than one, but you'll find one idea that you really want to build an ebook or a course or a retreat around.
Yeah, and that's something I want to emphasize. It's about, at least for me, about dumping a lot of stuff on paper and then picking out the parts that really resonate with me and that I'm really excited about that fit with, in my case, my readers' problems and where they want to go.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then the one core idea is so scary for people, especially beginners, because they want to include the kitchen sink. They want to, you know, directions to get to the moon. You know, they want to please everybody. And this will kill your business, I think. Now, not everybody agrees with me, but let me be bold here. I think what we need and how people are going to distinguish themselves is by saying, I am a stand for this. At least in this course, in this ebook, I help you do this one thing well. It can be a big thing, but you then break it down into very specific steps and how-tos. I help you do this thing because people are overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed. They're just as overwhelmed, if not more overwhelmed, people. And they want help solving a problem. And it may be the problem that you most care about is world peace. Well, maybe that becomes helping people have a peaceful relationship with their mother-in-laws. That's the one thing, right? Oh, but mother-in-laws, I should make it about all family. I'm saying not. Maybe the next course is how to have peace in your relationship with your partner. Maybe the next course is how to have peace with your son. And the next one is with your daughter. And you really allow yourself to chunk it down. It's scary, but I think it allows you to really create content that is yours and market to the people who are most going to want that content. What do you think, Henry?
Yeah, and I what comes up for me is I remember when I was going through Teach Now that you mentioned that it's okay to leave people hungry. So you don't have to give them everything or include the kitchen sink like you put it. So it's okay to just cover the core essentials and then leave people wanting more.
Yes, it's important to leave people wanting more. If you are trying to please everybody, you're very likely to please anybody, and you will very likely not ever finish the course that you're creating because you'll keep adding stuff to it. And it'll become this huge, like, gobbly mess. Like, you know, you need to provide focus for yourself and your people. And then that actually frees you up to get something done, to keep it the right size, and also to then find where are these just right people? Where are the people who want to have peace with their mother-in-law? Where are the people who want to have peace in their relationship? Oh, wow, yes, I can look for relationship blogs. I can try to get on radio shows that talk about this. I can start looking for how to use SEO or keywords. I have no idea how to do that, but I'm sure there's a way to talk about this and attract people to my content and my course. It becomes so much more manageable.
Yeah, and that actually reminds me of, I want to bring this back to the creative process and something I've observed in myself, which is that I start with the chaotic process where I dump my mind on paper, mind maps and everything else. But then if I have a deadline for my course, something magical starts happening as I start approaching the deadline. So I start putting together my course and I start putting together an outline that's just good enough, not perfect, but good enough. And then as I approach the deadline, I somehow become more clear because I'm determined to make this work and my unconscious somehow follows along.
Yeah, and it's trust. And that trust comes from doing it, right? It comes from actually putting it into action, not thinking about it. Because remember, everybody, your mind wants to rehearse creating the course. Your mind doesn't want to actually do it, because that's not how your mind evolved. Right? We didn't just, the people who went out and killed the mammoth, some of them got killed.
Yeah.
People who rehearsed killing the mammoth, they had more success. It's not that the rehearsing is bad, but that your mind likes to get stuck there. So you have to go, okay, rehearsing, that's what my mind does. It's always going to do it. And I am going to be here in this moment, making a mind map, doing a brain dump. Writing a rough sales page. Here's another way in, everybody. I created a lot of my courses and retreats by writing the sales page first.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't offer it to the public until I step back for a few days or weeks and go, do I really want to do this? Can I deliver it, right? I do a dance between creating and writing the sales page to find the promises and the benefits that I really think I can deliver.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the sales page, because that's something I do as well if I'm stuck. So I'll try to write the sales page. I'll see what kind of benefits, what kind of outcomes I can offer. So basically what I do is, if I'm stuck, I step away, I take a break if I need to, but I always keep looking at the course and what I want to do from different angles. So I guess my next question to you would be, how do you go from the chaotic part, which is dumping your mind on paper, to actually creating the course and starting it?
Well, I think there's a number of ways. So I just want to remind everybody there's no right way, but I think the one way that I really like to do, and I totally resist doing, I just want to bust myself, is sticking to that one core idea. And even if I can't name it elegantly or super clearly, trying to name something of it and write it down on a post-it note or an index card or, you know, on your desktop. And I keep referring to that and imagine that as both a bucket, like, okay, is the content that I'm coming up with fit in that core idea? Like it makes a container, but also imagine it as a filter on top of that bucket, right? Oh, so I can filter it through this. Does it fit? Do I need to tweak it to fit with this core idea to help people learn this? What could I bring into this container? Is it guest interviews? I love to do guest interviews. I get a little obsessive with them. You know, is there exercises? Is there stories? Are there book titles? Are there resources that would help fill up this container to help people learn, explore, live this one core idea? So that to me is one way to get going. Another way that really lights people up is to steal like a teacher. And I learned this as a writer from a wonderful writing teacher here in Seattle. I live outside of Seattle, Washington in the US. And this woman's name is Priscilla Long. And she wrote a wonderful writing book called The Writer's Portable Mentor. You can get it on Amazon. And I took some classes from her, and she had the idea of stealing structure as a writer. And literally, she had us go in and take a piece of writing and copy it structurally, not content at all, completely different content, but copy it sentence by sentence. I copied a piece about hummingbirds and wrote about my dad's diagnosis with pancreatic cancer. And that was one of the best pieces of writing I ever wrote. Well, you can do the same thing as a teacher. And what it does for you is it gives you a container, a filter to say, okay, structure, huh? Okay, this course that I took from so-and-so last fall, they did it this way. They had live calls, and then they had those live calls structured, each one around one core idea. And then they followed it up with, you know, three emails that picked out and reminded us to do these three actions. And then there was an ebook, but the ebook wasn't about what we covered in courses. It was additional things you could do to develop each of these core ideas in your life. Ah, that's a structure. Okay, another structure. And then you go and you look, and you'll start to see the structures that most fit your material. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I actually do this because what I do sometimes is I buy courses just to see how people are teaching them. And then I pick out what I like and what I don't like. So I incorporate what I like, and then I avoid what I don't like, because I observe myself as the student and I notice what I would like more of and what I would like less of. And then I use the structure I like to create my courses. And that makes things so much easier because I don't have to come up with everything from scratch.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that is what frees our mind up. It's almost like we're using the mind's desire to preview things by giving ourselves structure. I have seen this unlock so many writers and teachers when they go, I tell writers, go look for structure. Don't read for content, read for structure. And then they go, oh, I see. I'll give you a kind of a simple example, but you know, a popular form that doesn't sell well for books is a collection of interviews. And so I say to people, if you want to interview people, great, but go and look at a book like, I can't think of the title, I'll think of it in a minute, that takes these interviews that the two writers did, but then weaves them together in each chapter, takes out pieces of them and weaves them together to make each chapter's point. It's a very different way to approach using interview material and much richer.
Yeah, and it's kind of like what I talk about a lot, which is looking at what's already working. Like look at courses that are selling that people enjoy, look at what people are saying about them, what do they like and not like, and then look at what you can, like structure-wise, you can borrow from that and put into your own course.
Exactly, exactly. But just remember, you're not borrowing content. And yeah, you shouldn't even borrow design. I was just talking to my designer before this for our sales page for the next round of Teach Now. And we were looking at a couple other sales pages, and I didn't need to remind her of this, but I did. Like, I don't want to do anything that looks the same. Because it makes people feel like they've been stolen from. And so it's really important not to steal design or content. Structure is very different. Structure is much more universal. And then it's also very important if you do quote people or if you do borrow, if you are influenced by people, really keep good notes so you can go back and do attribution. A huge, huge thing that I see happening on the internet, sometimes to the point where it makes me want to be the police of the internet, is people stealing other people's content and being really deeply influenced by people, but not calling that out and not claiming it as their own experience. And I know some examples from behind the scenes that really horrify me. So don't do that.
Yeah. So once you've gotten through this creative process, how do you actually get people on a course if you're starting out?
How do you get people to the course?
Yeah, how do you get people like to join the course and buy the course?
Right, right. Well, I think a really key distinction is that developing your content and your voice and your material is one side of your work, and the other side of your work is to develop a tribe. And sometimes they intersect in really wonderful ways because your tribe gives you great inspiration for part or all of a offer, but sometimes they're separate. Right. And the those of us who are creative types love to go create content. Right. I'm always having to bust some of my friends that I support to like, stop, no more content, no more developing courses. Now you need to put that same creativity into building your tribe. So knowing that you may have resistance to one or the other, being aware of it and developing an equal amount of time to both in the beginning, and then eventually you have your course or courses, your ebooks, whatever, and you're spending most of your time developing your reach, marketing, right, in all its different forms. So just being aware that you need to build that part of your business as equally in the beginning or more, and definitely more as time goes on once you have some things to offer. And you cannot go away and develop the content and then come out and expect to just tell the world to buy it. You have to have been developing your tribe all along.
Yeah, and I see some people get stuck in the trap where they feel like marketing is sleazy, but to me, marketing is just an extension of what you do, and it's an opportunity for you to get the word out. So a lot of people have apprehensions about marketing, but it's also about noticing that it's not marketing people are not liking in this case, it's their how they relate to it and what they've learned marketing to be, because it can be used both for good and bad.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, you know, one of the ideas that I love is that marketing is teaching. So you are offering little tidbits of goodness that people can use, and you offer it so freely and so lovingly. Notice the word tidbit. You don't give away the store. You don't overwhelm people, but you give them a little something that they can use. You do this in your blog post. You do this in interviews like right now, right? I'm giving you guys a ton of good content. Now, hopefully, great. You'll come and you'll check out Teach Now. You'll come out and check out my blog, whatever. But if you don't, great. I still want you to go use the material. There's nothing sticky about it. So it's your internal work, your inner work to know, I know things, I know enough, and I can offer it freely. But I'm not giving away the store. I know that what I offer is also valuable. And so the deeper work or the whole meal deal is behind door number one for this price and behind door number two for this price. And just being comfortable with that element number one. A huge thing I see beginners and, you know, old hats doing is feeling bad that they charge money for anything. So you got to work through that. And then the second thing you can do is really embrace marketing as teaching. I'm teaching people, I'm offering them some content, but I'm offering the content that helps them know whether they want to buy more from me, whether they want to work more for me. That's the strategic part. And you got to get comfortable putting that strategic piece in and not feel like you're a bad person because you did it, right?
Yeah. And also, what I want to say is that marketing is a skill. So like anything, it takes time to get good at, and it takes time to build your audience and tribe. And it just, things, they take time, and you get so much better at it when you actually do it. And then you find your own way of marketing and helping people actually buy your stuff and helping yourself build an audience.
Exactly. Right. You need to let yourself have the learning curve with that. And you need to know that there is probably more hype and more crap out there about marketing than anything else. So you have to run it through your own filter. And please know there's no way to do it. For everybody who tells you you've got to do it this way, I can find you 10 examples of people who did it another way. So it's just the same thing that I tell people when I'm teaching them about writing. There are no rules except you can't have misspellings. And yeah, you probably need 1-inch margins and you need to double space it. But beyond that, for every time somebody says you have to write your book proposal this way, you have to include this, you can find someone who broke the rule successfully.
Yeah. So I have just a few questions left before we wrap things up. So next one is, how do you create your courses? I mean, do you create your courses upfront and then launch them? Because I found that I create courses the best when I'm on a deadline. So I launch a course, I may have some material ready, and then I create it as I go along and listen to feedback. But how do you do things?
Yes, I do it. Well, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes I do both. But I always create a deadline by offering it to people. And I always create the first version of it with live students. I'm an X on the Myers-Briggs. I'm an introvert, extrovert. I shouldn't say that. I'm a little bit more of an introvert. I need to be alone to get my energy back, but I create best in relationship with people. So this makes it sometimes a little slower and sloppier than it needs to be. And sometimes there's some panic involved with it as well. With Teach Now, I created it with my friend Michelle Christensen, and we designed the sales page, went back and forth. What can we really offer? What do we know? What would this look like? What would work? And then we offered it, and every week we created the material that we would then go and teach live. We did that twice, and the second version I edited and made into the product. Right. And then I offer live calls with that so that I'm still in contact with people. Some people like to create an e-course or a training or an ebook and never talk to anybody about it, never have contact with students at all. That makes me crazy. Right. So I need both the deadline and the ongoing bodies, you know, talking to each other, learning to stay in integrity and engaged. With the How to Create Your Own Mastermind course that I created last year, that I did some material ahead of time. Like I offered it. And then before we started the live portion of the calls or the course, I created some short audios and I created some handouts. And actually, I did that before I offered the course before the doors opened, so to speak. So it was some material that was already created to get people started. And then they came to the live calls where I did more teaching and coaching to get them on board to actually get the groups going. So I did a kind of combo there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And again, I want to emphasize the thing that I'll probably change my process in the future, because I'm just constantly listening to what I resonate with. So I'm trying new things. So it again comes back to just doing what you can do. So if you can't create a course on the fly and do all these things, then just do what you can do and get a course out there. And also something you mentioned was version one. So the first version doesn't have to be the best in the world.
Oh, no, no, no. Iterate, 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 baby. I love to iterate. But then you have to know when to stop.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Okay, that's good enough, right? I have a friend who is, she's just so prolific. She's in the scrapbooking world. And she's 3 kids, right? I have 1 kid who's at college and a stepson at home, right? I am not in the early active parenting days at all anymore. And she just gets so much done with her business and these kids. Her thing is, I do 80%. I get it to 80%, and that's good enough. So learn if you are a perfectionist or you are getting held up at places, get some feedback. Maybe you do need to fix that a little bit more, but maybe it's good enough. And I got feedback about Teach Now because Michelle is not actively a part of it anymore because her babies are little. And so I thought about like scrapping the whole thing and redoing it from scratch. And some of my early students from the first round were like, no, it's great the way it is. You can go forward with it with Michelle's wisdom in it, but you're holding the container and doing the live portion now. But I had to have that mirrored back to me. Even though I've had 650 students go through the course, I'm like, I have to change it. No, I don't.
Yeah, so the next question I have is, because a lot of people have this fear of, what if I fail? I mean, what if I create a course and there are no students, or one person joins and they refund, or something horrible happens?
Oh, well, welcome to the world. Yeah. Welcome to being human. That's like the first time your sweetie ever broke up with you and, you know, high school or college or this is what it's like. Don't take it personally. If you have to take it personally, then go do something, you know, to take care of yourself, you know, go watch some, you know, of your favorite reruns on television, or go for a run, or, you know, print out the feedback and take it to a friend and sit down and process it together. That's something that I know what Michelle used to do. She would work. She did a lot of work for Microsoft, and you talk about some brutal feedback, right? And she was talking about power and women and stuff that people did not want to talk about. And it's a very competitive culture in that corporation. And so before she would even open the feedback from the trainings, she would get someone to be there with her. And then that person could coach her to what could she really use? And you got to consider who's giving you the feedback. If you go on TripAdvisor and read about a hotel or a restaurant, you don't believe everything, people. You look at the people who are reviewing, you go, wow, they can't spell. Maybe they're not, you know, or wow, they sound like a total princess. They have to have 600 count sheets. That's not me. I don't mind a few scorpions falling on my bed.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to filter out, you need to get support, and then you need to say, well, what can I iterate next time? What can I do differently next time? And with practice, and it's taken me years with practice now, I get negative feedback. I led a retreat in January and I got negative feedback like I've never gotten from somebody before. So after 20 years of doing this work, people, and someone said, my feedback would be, don't come to one of Jen's retreats unless you're part of her inner circle, blah, blah, blah. It totally blew me away. I got triggered. I had to go inside and get a hug from my sweetie Bob. And then I processed it with a friend who's a master trainer teacher. And he helped me see what I could take away and how I could do it differently next time and what happened. And I was able to write her a really nice note. I refunded her money, even though she didn't ask for that. And I was done.
Yeah, it's about, I mean, like you said, you've been doing this for a long, long time. So it's about taking that feedback in and then stepping back if you have to. And then when you're clear, coming back and seeing what you can actually do about the feedback, because it's not good to respond if you're angry or sad or any of those things.
Oh God, no, no, no. You know what? This is what I'll do sometimes. I will write the angry, pissy email without anybody's address in it, so I can't inadvertently send it. Yeah. And then I'll just get it out and then I delete it, you know, and I'll be like, I can't believe you said that. What kind of idiot are you? Can't you take any responsibility for yourself? You know, all of my dark, shadowy stuff out. But it's in the email form without anybody's address attached. And then I can just delete it. But I feel heard.
Yeah.
Or you can do it with a friend or your beloved, you know, like, can you believe it? And you just tell them, I need 5 minutes to be negative and not in right speech. Right? I need to allow myself the space to do that. And interestingly enough, if you allow yourself to do it, the sting dissipates very quickly. And over time, you don't even need to do that often.
Yeah, I find the resistance is actually what keeps bad feelings and negativity there, because we've been taught that it's not good to be negative or anything. But when you actually allow it to be there and even express it in a constructive way, it just goes away that much quicker when you don't want it to go away.
Right, exactly. When you're trying to, oh no, I should be spiritual and I should be kind and you know, or you collapse. Oh, I'm sure they're right. Oh, I suck. I should never do this again. No, 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 no. Wholeness. So you hold it and you hold their feedback and know that there may be some helpful truth in it. There may not be, but it doesn't define you. It doesn't define your course. It's not everybody's experience. And it doesn't determine your future.
Yeah. And so we've come to the last question, and I'm sure you'll recognize this one. So it is, what would you say to the Jen just starting out with courses?
Oh, I love that question. I would take that 27-year-old by the hand and I would say, you don't have to live perfectly what you're teaching. You don't have to pretend to be anybody you're not. It's okay that you're often the youngest person in the room. It's okay that you're sometimes often not practicing great self-care. It's okay that you're in the question of what you're teaching. Let yourself be there. Let yourself be in the circle. Let yourself be human. You don't have to be didactic. You don't have to have the answers. You have to be willing to offer confidently what you do know. And then let the rest evolve.
Awesome. That's pretty much what I always say. Just take things one step at a time, do your best, and let things evolve and let life unfold, because it's going to do it with or without your resistance.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You're so wise, young man.
So where can people find you and what you do if they want to learn more from you?
There's two places. The most comprehensive place is Jennifer Louden, LOUDEN.com. That's my home base. I blog there once a week, and I usually have a cool interview with people on some Saturdays. And then the Teacher's Path, theteacherspath.com is where you can find out information about the next Teach Now course, which is how I met Henry, and has a lot more. It's a 6-module, 45 master teacher interview, super affordable, deep dive into teaching anything. And we've had 650 happy alums go through it, people who never thought of themselves as teachers, and people who have been teaching for 20 years. So yeah. Those are the two places.
Yeah, I really enjoyed going through Teach Now. And I also got some ideas from there on my own courses, and I observed the structure there. So I just found a lot of stuff that resonated with me, and that's why I decided to interview Jen today. So thanks again for doing this interview. It's been a lot of fun.
Me too. You're great. Thank you, Henry.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Jennifer. I know it was a long one, but once I get people on the line, I want to dive into the nitty-gritty and get real details and real actionable tips. So make sure you think about how you can use this information. Think about what your next smallest step is. If you want to create a course, know that it doesn't have to be perfect right away. You just have to start somewhere. And you will make plenty of mistakes. You will have to face your fears and all that good stuff. It's all a part of building your business and following your passion. So if you want more goodies on how to build your lifestyle business, come on over to wakeupcloud.com and check out the free stuff. And I'll see you in the next episode. So this is Henry signing out. Bye for now.